the edge of our hope, at the end of our time. We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
The strength of this starship lay in its diversity.
You see, our glorious diversity, that is not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are.
You don't just let things happen. You make a stand. You say no. You have the guts to do what's right when everyone else just runs away.
But we must fight this darkness that is threatening to engulf us. Each of us must be a ray of hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show.
Wow, such corn. Much disturbed.
Oh my god. I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
I'm Jen.
And our very special guest today is none other than the infamous master of scents and delicious, wonderful books, Megan O'Keefe.
Shouldn't that be mistress?
I think it should.
You can be mistress. I mean, whatever title you would prefer.
I feel mistress is appropriate for this movie.
Yeah, I mean, if Vampire Lestat could be a rock god, you could be queen, mistress, all of them, that's fine.
Queen of the damned books.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. Yeah, so if you haven't figured it out already, we are watching the infamous vampire sequel, Queen of the Damned, based on the Anne Rice books, Sorta, starring Aaliyah, and featuring guys in weird spiky uniform. So, there you go. So, before we get into that whole ordeal, we should probably talk about what we're all drinking. So we're going to start with you, Paul. What are you drinking, sir?
I am drinking Peach Snapple because I need some joy in my life after this movie.
I feel like we're going to have words later.
I don't blame you, Paul. I really don't blame you.
What's the fact that's on the cap of your Snapple?
It's just poured out of a large bottle that I bought in the store.
And there's no fact on that?
There's no fact.
God, they're really skimping on it these days. That's just unfortunate. This is what it's like to live in Trump's America, I guess.
It really is a dystopia.
Make Snapple great again.
Make Snapple great again.
Oh, goodness. All right. Okay. Well, what about you, Megan? What are you drinking?
I have elevated a little bit from Snapple and gone straight to the Irish whiskey because I felt that was required for this movie. So it's by Redbreast, and it's a 12-year-old single pot whiskey.
I'm sorry, that is far too classy for this podcast and this movie.
Oh no.
Uh-oh.
But how else am I supposed to forget I ever watched this movie?
I think you're going to need something better than whiskey, like maybe some good old-fashioned moonshine out of an actual mason jar.
Just actual ethanol. Just skip
yeah, just
to the
ethanol. In one of those IV bags. Just straight in. Just, yeah. No digestion. Just, yeah.
I have to say, actually, it might be thematic, given that Lestat is played, I believe, by an Irishman, although he might be Scottish. I don't know.
Okay, we're going to check that fact right now.
He's Irish.
He is Irish! Yay! You are thematically oh, no. on point this evening.
Oh, I'm not sure I wanted to be.
Okay, so apparently I've just been talking like about Stuart Peter Townsend for like a minute and a half, and my mic was muted.
Good job!
Oh, no!
Starting this podcast off right.
I'm going to let all the listeners just imagine what wonderful, beautiful things I was saying about him. And then we'll move on.
The man who essentially has only been cast as pretty people.
But he's not that pretty. Especially with blood on him. He just kind of looks skeezy.
I tend to agree, but let's get into that a little bit later.
I mean, at least Tom Cruise, when you put a little blood on Tom Cruise, like he's like, okay, I can kind of get into it. But like this guy,
no,
I'm like,
No, you need to stop. Because
stop.
Totally something to cover later.
Dude, I have already drank like half the bottle of wine that I just opened. So
good job. Well done. Okay, so now it's your turn since you've already spoiled it.
I actually don't know what I'm drinking. It's a blueberry wine.
Oh.
From the local area. So it's an Alachua County blueberry wine of some kind. It was on sale at my local Public.
Nice. Well done.
It's actually not bad. It's pretty good. I don't actually like wine, but this I could get into, as you can tell by the fact that half the bottle's almost gone in like 10 minutes. All right, Jen, what are you drinking?
I tried to be thematic as possible, given the narrow selection of decent beer at my local liquor store. So I got a microbrew, Tommyknocker Brewery, their Blood Orange IPA. It was as close as I could get to
blood.
Blood.
I mean, it works.
It does.
I don't think it's actually as red as blood, but, you know, it's good. And it will get me sufficiently liquored up to review this movie.
I'm sure it's more bloody than the Karo dyed corn syrup they had for the movie, so.
True. True. Well, okay, so we should probably get into this. So we're watching Queen of the Damned, which means one of us is going to be the victim of this rock fiasco by having to describe what this movie is about. So who has decided that they will be the victim for that, because it's not me.
Apparently it's going to be me this evening, and I am the worst person at giving summaries, so bear with me, people.
We'll correct you as you go along, it's fine.
The vampire Lestat, which people may remember from previous films as being the most awful vampire in the history of ever, returns in Queen of the Damned when he hears heavy metal music. Yes. The vampire Lestat is a heavy metal goth fan.
I mean, don't knock it. Like, I mean, that's all right.
I'm not. His taste in music is totally acceptable. I don't blame him at all. However, he wakes up and decides he's going to join a band. Because, let's be honest, that's clearly what all vampires were meant to do in the first place. So he joins a band, and he decides he's going to live a public life because he's sick of being in the shadows, and he's basically taunting the rest of the vampires. Meanwhile, a woman named Jessie Reeves, who is a researcher for some sort of paranormal ancient organization called the Talamasca, tells them, "I think he's a vampire." And they're like, "Yeah, we know. We've always known. I mean, let's be honest. It's freaking Lestat. He hasn't exactly been low profile throughout his life. And the guy who made him Marius, also not exactly low profile." So she becomes obsessed with him and like tracks him down at a club and then follows him to LA and blah, blah, blah. She is also the descendant of a line of a matrilineal family that was started by the fourth or fifth vampire in the history of ever, Maharat.
God, you remember a lot about this movie.
I read the book.
So you're making it sound way more complex than I think it was.
Yeah, exactly. These are the things that I actually dislike about the movie, because they skip over all the cool parts of who Maharat is. And no, Jessie's terrible. I hate her. But we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll explain why. Yeah.
She like follows him to LA, blah, 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 wants to be a vampire. Ooh, ooh, pretty vampire. And then he throws a big concert. All the vampires attack him. And oh, by the way, at the 60-minute mark, Aaliyah shows up because she is Akasha, the Queen of the Damned, and she wants to turn the world into an ocean of blood and death and kill everybody and make Lestat her new king. And that's basically it. That's the plot of this movie. Lestat throws a concert, Akasha shows up, then she gets killed, the end.
You forgot, like, Lestat's, like, sire, if that's what we're gonna call him.
I didn't forget him, Marius.
Yeah, I mean, he shows up and he kind of defends Lestat and they, like, rip some heads off, and it's kind of cool.
It is pretty cool, and Aaliyah, like, bursts people into flame, which is awesome.
Yeah, she's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Armand also shows up, but in this movie he's blonde, no longer a Spaniard portrayed by Antonio Banderas, which I feel like is a gross oversight on the part of the casting director for this movie.
Yeah, deeply.
Deeply.
Yeah, my guess is they had trouble getting a lot of the original cast for this.
No, hilariously, they talked about having Tom Cruise, and then they were like, nah, we need someone new.
to play the immortal, never-changing vampire. We need someone new. Yeah.
Exactly. Because Tom Cruise, the Wonder Boy who never ages, just is looking too old these days.
Can you just imagine, though? Because didn't Tom Cruise do a musical, like, Rock of Ages or something, where, like, he made up for the fact that he wasn't in this? Because he did, like, a rock musical.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Is this a rock musical? Like, is that what we're calling this?
Well, I mean, this isn't, but...
Like, I'm not sure how that movie somehow makes up for him not being in this movie. And I will grant you that Antonio Banderas, they never could have gotten him for the 5 minutes that Armand is actually in this movie.
Okay, so hold your jets. There was actually a movie called Rock of Ages, came out in 2012 by Adam Shankman, the director, and Tom Cruise played a character by the name of Stacy Jax with two X's.
I must see this movie because that sounds amazingly awful.
Yeah, it sounds like if Sons of Steel was made by Americans.
Oh no.
Oh yes.
Shout out to Danny.
Night of the Dystopia. Yeah, so there we go. So at least Tom Cruise made up for the fact that they didn't take him for this movie, which clearly affected his career.
So.
Blink, blink.
Not even one fucking bit.
Oh, yeah, the only thing that I didn't mention is that Jesse is turned into a vampire at the end. The end.
As you do, right? You know. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, I felt like basically the whole movie was building up to her becoming a vampire. Not, you know, the queen of the damned owning the world or anything.
Do you want to know what movie Tom Cruise released in 2002, the same year of Queen of the Damned, instead of this?
Something much better, I'm sure.
I mean, it was a pretty small science fiction film. I don't think it was really important. It wasn't directed by anybody significant. It was something called Minority Report. Directed by some guy named Steven Spielberg. Like, it's not like that guy's done anything important.
Anything, nothing. Yeah, no, he totally should have gone with Queen of the Damned.
I know, he should really have begged.
He should have, yeah.
When they announced that they were not recasting him as Lestat, he should have been like, I demand this role, because no other good role will ever come to me.
He should have just, like, started dressing like Vampire Lestat and, like, just showing up in Hollywood being like, I am Lestat, and, like, just running around being Lestat until they cast him.
I don't think he needs to, because Tom Cruise is actually a vampire.
That would explain a lot.
That explains why he's not in this. That was all a cover-up. They really didn't want him.
And if you consider the fact that Anne Rice has retconned the entire storyline to be that vampires are actually aliens, it totally ties in with his religion.
Wait.
Back up, Jen. She did what now?
How? Yes. Yes.
How?
How? What? Why?
Why?
The original storyline of this book, right, the really important storyline is actually the Maharat storyline. Maharat is a twin sister of somebody whose name I forget, Makarat or something. They are the fourth and fifth vampires that are ever created. Akasha is saved upon death by, and I forget the actual creature's name, Amel or Amet or something like that, who is... It turns out, now, 30 years after writing the first book or whatever, Anne Rice has said that he's actually like an alien symbiote.
You mean like a Gold?
Yes, basically. Which is amazing.
I'm just gonna pretend I don't know that, because...
I know! I was like, wait, the Vampire Chronicles have been science fiction this whole time? Mine. Blown.
This is upsetting.
Oh no.
So there. Now you know. So Tom Cruise, with his very peculiar religion, could very well be an Anne Rice vampire.
There is some terrible logic in there.
Oh my god. Jen is correct. It's in the new book, Prince Lestat and the Realms of Atlantis, which came out last year. That's when she does it. And I kid you not, there is an IO9 page that has spoiler warnings, and it says, quote, aliens have arrived in the Vampire Chronicle.
Yeah, that's what I just explained. Thank you very much.
Whoa.
And it actually explains Atlantis. Oh.
Yes. Yes. You are welcome, citizens.
Oh my god, this... No, listen to this paragraph. And it just explains Scientology, like, to a T. It explains exactly what they're trying to get rid of inside themselves. They're getting rid of vampires.
I'm more brilliant than I thought I was.
All right, so I'm going to read this paragraph. Y'all can just, like, thirst on this as you will. So, before Realms of Atlantis, which is the new book, Lestat and his brethren only knew that the vampire's curse came to be when a bloodthirsty spirit named Amel possessed the ancient Egyptian queen Akasha, the character of Queen of the Damned. It is Amel's spirit that can be passed from vampire to vampire, connecting them all and giving vampires their powers and weakness. In Prince Lestat, in 2014, it's discovered that Amel is still conscious in this neural vampire network, but primarily residing in the spiritual core of the vampires, which Lestat has absorbed after the defeat of Kavakasha.
Neural vampire network?
I'm kind of on board with that. Like, that sounds cool.
Basically, Amel is thetans. That explains your thetan count when you go in and get that little thing. Every time you go to, like, a California State Fair and there's that one Scientology lady with the little gizmo and you hold it and the little thing goes wah, 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 and it shows that you've got thetan.
I have literally never done that before in my life, but I am totally behind the theory that Anne Rice has actually just been writing about Scientologists this entire time.
And this explains so much why Tom Cruise wasn't in this. It wasn't that they didn't want him because he was too old. It's that he had to secretly refuse because he didn't want it revealed that he is actually the reincarnation of Amel through the Scientology religion.
Wait, aren't they trying to get rid of Thetans? So wouldn't that make Tom Cruise a terrible Scientologist?
No, because he is pure. He's like trying to like dispel Amel from himself, which explains so much about his behavior when he kind of behaves kind of strange. It's that Amel is trying to come through and make him all vampire-like, and he doesn't want anybody to know that he's actually a vampire.
Huh, so he's actually waging this brave internal battle against...
With himself and psychology, yes.
It's basically Queen of the Damned is just a prequel for Battlefield Earth.
Oh my god. Holy shit, Jen.
Oh no.
We have just discovered the greatest conspiracy in the history of mankind.
And listeners, that's about how good this movie is.
Okay. I think we should just end it. Like, there's no point in going on.
No, we have a duty to our listeners to actually do this podcast rather than talking about Scientologists, counts, and whatever. We actually have to do this podcast.
But we have created the best conspiracy theory in the history of Scientology, I think. So
that is pretty fantastic.
Scientologists are going to sue our asses off. We're doomed.
That's okay. We could use the publicity.
Well, in any case. Okay, so we need to dive into this. So now we know what this movie is about. This movie is not well-liked, but we will probably discuss many of the reasons why in just a second. But first, we're going to dive into why we liked this movie, our one reason, as it were, and we're going to start with Paul.
Oh, goody. That means I have an open field because the few things that I like about this movie aren't already taken. That's nice.
But if you take mine, I will fight you.
No, because mine comes from an oblique angle and from my background and my interests, so.
The architecture.
No.
No, color. Color. He likes the colors.
No. I actually have a substantial, like, I didn't have to pretend to like the architecture or the crappy concert sets or the very underlit scenes anywhere. But so I didn't have to pretend to like that. What I like about this film goes to my role playing game interests. You all know, and all the listeners, I hope, know, I'm big into role-playing. I've been in role-playing for X amount of years. And it was interesting to see some of the tropes of Vampire the Masquerade, the role-playing game, played out right on the screen. I mean, I haven't read the Anne Rice books. I know I'm a terrible person. Deal with it.
You're really not. You're really, really not.
But I have played plenty of Vampire the Masquerade. I know the basic setup of the Masquerade, and what this movie does is it shows it and shows what vampire society is like under the Masquerade. I mean, they have their little clubs. They stay underground. They stay in the shadows. Marius keeps telling Lestat, yeah, that we can't be seen. And we have that little scene on the beach. And then we have Lestat say, F that. I want to go public. I want to break the masquerade. I want to show the world what happens when the masquerade gets broken. And basically, this is really a very strange role-playing Vampire the Masquerade role-playing session, because you get all the tropes from a Vampire Masquerade role-playing game. Not even all that. We also have elders. Akash is obviously a earlier generation vampire that feeds on other vampires. We have vampires getting power and energy from eating especially more powerful vampires themselves. That's straight from the role-playing game. I mean, it's all there. And I appreciate seeing stuff that I've only role-played actually turned into screen fodder for a change. I can see how the role-playing game regularized and made some more things rational, but it was nice to actually see a beloved role-playing game, which I hear is actually going to have a fifth edition come out. So, written by Kenneth Hite, so that's exciting. But here we have Vampire the Masquerade, the role as a movie, and I can dig that. I mean, it's a terrible movie in many respects, but if I could imagine this was a LARP, I could get through it, and that's what I did.
Yeah, Marius is a Ventru, and you know Lestat's a Sombra.
Oh right? My goodness!
Yeah. You can actually pretty much go down like clan by clan for each one of the characters, and like the original book, The Vampire Lestat, was released in like 1985. So I'm actually kind of shocked that Anne Rice didn't just straight up sue White Wolf for Vampire the Masquerade personally, because it's pretty much a straight rip of all of her concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they codified it to a greater degree, but yeah, you can see all of it there. And it was funny because when I was like whining about this movie earlier, doing a live tweet of it, and my friend Emily, because I was like, dude, please tell me that some of the misogyny of the goth world has at least gone away at this point. And Emily was like, no, it really hasn't. But at the same time, I still love this movie because it used to be the thing that we watched to get like pumped for our LARPing sessions.
Nice.
For Vampire the Masquerade. And I was
wow.
Like, yeah, I'm really not surprised by that in the slightest sense whatsoever, because I had friends who did exactly the same thing. I would argue that it's not as good as the TV show Vampire the Masquerade, which is saying something about Queen of the Damned.
What about Kindred the Embraced?
Sorry, that's what I meant. Kindred the Embraced. It's not as good as that.
Yeah, well, yeah, because given the quality of this movie, I'm not surprised.
So I also played Vampire the Masquerade. Grade in high school. Do you know which clan I was in?
Malkovian?
Nope.
I want to imagine Sean as a Bruja. Like,
nope, definitely not me.
I didn't say it was true. I said I wanted it to be true.
I like how people think that I am more aggressive than I actually am.
What's the answer, Sean?
Tremere.
Blood Mage? Oh, come on, really?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh.
Hell yeah. I don't remember anything about it. All I know is I played a character that was in that, and that was my thing.
They're the asshole blood mage vampires. Yeah.
Yeah, that's me. That sounds like me. Yeah. I sound like an asshole blood mage vampire, don't I?
No comment.
That's okay. At least you're not an emo Toreador.
No, definitely not me. Well, in any case, I guess this would be a good time to move on to Megan.
Oh, no. So, yeah, Paul kind of stole my thing there with the White Wolf connection.
Sorry!
Which, being number two, I thought I might be able to get away with it, but I guess not. So,
there's actually only two likes in this entire movie. I expect you to steal the second one from Sean.
Yeah, so I really, when this movie came out, I was pretty much a hardcore goth in, like, the 90s and 2000s. And this soundtrack was my jam.
No!
Yeah.
No! This is mine! No!
A very specific part of the soundtrack, though. So the outro song to the movie is by a band called The Kidney Thieves. And at the time, they were incredibly hard to get a hold of. So I only found out about them through the soundtrack. And I went and I hunted them down on the high seas of the internet and found their albums and became pretty big fan of them. So this movie gave me that, and that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
Yeah.
You've made Sean very sad, though.
I'm sorry, Sean.
I know, because There's not much I can do now.
But it was mostly the Kidney Thieves thing. The rest of the album is open.
Well, no, let's just get the album out of the way, and I'll just pick something else I like about this movie, of which there are many things I could choose, so it's okay.
Many things? Okay.
Shut your mouth, Jen. Shut your mouth and don't judge me. There's going to be a story later, and you're going to enjoy it, so just be quiet.
No judgment. None whatsoever. I love you.
Yeah, no, that is bullshit. Every time I talk about a movie I like that you hate with a passion, you're like, I'm going to judge you forever.
I don't hate it with a passion. I don't hate it with a passion.
Okay. No, well, here's the thing. I have never heard the end of my Mac and Me appreciation.
I haven't even seen that. And I never will. I haven't even seen that. And I counter Mac and Me with Waterworld, Mr. Duke.
Yeah, well, you should actually be burned at the stake.
Wait, no, I liked Waterworld.
Oh my god!
You're outnumbered, Sean.
Megan is my kindred spirit.
Not in the episode we recorded. Jen was definitely by herself on that one.
I was so alone.
Nobody fucking liked Waterworld. But anyway, so this album. So, like, I had a bunch of friends, and, like, I went and saw this movie with them. And, like, I just got into the soundtrack. Like, I don't remember the movie when I first saw it. I didn't remember this movie till I rewatched it, like, a bunch of times a couple years ago. And don't ask me about that. We'll talk about that later, I'm sure. But the album is freaking fantastic. So the music is originally done by the lead singer, one of the people from Korn.
Jonathan Davis.
The band Korn, which, like, only people from, like, the late 90s, early 2000s remember. And then, like, nobody else remembers them because if you do, you're, like, I guess a bad person. And
what? No, everybody likes Korn.
Yeah, they're relevant now. Like, they did a whole dubstep remix album with Skrillex.
No, that is by definition means you're not relevant anymore.
No!
Dubstep died. What? I'm sorry, but dubstep is not a thing anymore. I like dubstep, but it's dead.
It's dead. Okay.
You know how I know it's dead? You want to know how I know
because
it's dead?
Because Korn did an album with Skrillex?
Yeah. So anyway, like, this album is fantastic because, like, it's just all these great, like, rock and metal bands, like, during the, like, late 90s, early 2000s era, like, Disturbed, like, all these wonderful bands singing these fantastic songs. And I bought the album, and, like, I still own this thing. I listened to it. It's fucking great. And you all should listen to it. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to just go on YouTube right now and, like, listen to this shit because it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's so Ozfest circa 2000. It's amazing. And I've been to a lot of Ozfest.
That is very true.
I think I'm the wrong generation to appreciate the soundtrack. It was not my thing.
It's not my thing either. I think it is a good soundtrack, but I was never a big fan of this type of music. So to me, it's like I can enjoy it, but, you know, it's definitely not my jam. So I'm with you, Paul. It's okay.
So Paul, is your jam like the Mamas and the Papas? Is that like
God,
your era?
No, my jam is the Mamas and the Papas, but that doesn't mean anything because I am not that old. Thank you very much.
No, they were good. They're good. I love California Dreamin', by the way. That's a fantastic song.
I love them, except for the whole incest thing.
Oh, wait, what?
Jen, you're teaching me things I don't want to know today.
So I want to Google it, but I don't want my search history to have Mamas and Papas incest in it.
Sorry. Moving on. How do you not know these things, people? But I'm so happy that I was able to teach you guys two things new this evening.
Jesus. So Paul, just so we can maybe bring us back to a little of sobriety here, what is your jam?
My jam is generally progressive rock and 80s music.
Okay, that is respectable.
We're talking ELO, we're talking Talking Heads.
Pink Floyd?
We're talking Pink Floyd. We're talking Moody Blues. We're talking about the Flash Gordon soundtrack, so they have some Queen involved in there. So that's my jam.
That is a very respectable response, Paul. I approve. All right, so let's move on to Jen. Your first and only like, my lady.
Though it makes me sad, Aaliyah was a thing of absolute fucking beauty and totally deserved the title of Queen of the Damned.
Absolutely. Yeah, she is perfect in this.
Right, she is gorgeous in this.
Yes, she is.
She owns the screen every single time she's on it. I think Lestat should have worshipped her a little bit more than he did. And I'm very disappointed in him.
Lestat is a prat.
Right? such a prat. So, yeah, Aaliyah, she was amazing. And even though this movie in general is pretty fucking awful, I think if she had lived, she would have had an amazing career in film, because she really embodied Akasha. She has such limited screen time, and that's where my dislike comes in. I'll think of a different dislike. She has incredibly limited screen time and was severely underutilized in this film because she's just gorgeous and snake-like. And though there is something slightly problematic about her portrayal in general, and that's not her fault, it's totally the fault of the source material, because she is just fucking stunning. Period. Full stop.
So, I guess I'll push back a little bit, if you don't mind, Jen.
I do mind. If you talk shit about my Aaliyah, I will jump through this mic and cut you.
Yeah, I'm on Jen's side here. Aaliyah was perfect.
Hold on. There's a reason for my criticism, and it's not Aaliyah's fault. Because this is one of those things where when a film is made, right, sometimes at the end they decide to do reshoots, and like maybe want to tweak something, or they have different takes or whatever, right? And unfortunately, because of Aaliyah's death, they didn't really have that option, right? If they wanted to maybe redo a scene, or they wanted to add stuff, right? Which is, I'm sure, what Jen, you're going to talk about later, right? Like, it's one of the major flaws of the film, which we'll get to, and I won't talk about.
No, I have another dislike, so I'll do that later.
Okay, well, in any case, right? Like, then, just to get it out in the air, one of the biggest problems here is that Aaliyah isn't in this film enough, despite being kind of...
the titular character!
Right, yeah, the name of the main character of the movie, right? And so she's not here, so we don't have enough scenes with her. We don't have enough, and it's very clear, like, if the studio had, like, seen an early version of this and gone, okay, yo, like, it's called Queen of the Damned, and the Queen of the Damned isn't in this enough, you need more. Well, Aaliyah's gone, right? I believe she died in a plane crash,
if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Which is really unfortunate. It's really, really heartbreaking. And so we don't get that. And so I think there's some weakness in the performance. Like, it's very clear, like, this is really one of her first major screen performances.
No, it wasn't.
It feels like it to me, but I think that's because of the limits.
No, it was because of what they chose to do, because she had already been in Romeo Must Die, which I loved at the time. I don't know about everybody else in the world, but I fucking love Romeo Must Die. It's a Jet Li movie.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, you're right. So she was in something a couple years before this in terms of feature film, and she'd been in a couple of TV things prior, so.
Yeah, that one was released in 2000, but she didn't die until August, and the movie was actually released only like 5 months later. I don't know what the production schedule was on Queen of the Damned, but I don't think that's actually a legitimate excuse in any way, shape, or form. They did redo some of her lines.
Right, I believe they used her brother?
Her brother redubbed some of it, which is interesting. And I think it was just primarily to get the voice resonance that they went with, which was cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's sort of, you see that mirrored at a much more advanced level when Heath Ledger passes away. They do the forget the name of the film now. Impossible Something of Dr. Parnassus, which... that film was literally, like, they didn't complete it, so they had to find a way to kind of get around that. That's, like, a much more, like, in-depth version of using a brother to sort of fill gaps, but, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think they were well done with production of the film by the time she died, because it started in October of 2000. So, unless they were in production for over a year, or almost a year, which is possible, but I think filming would have been well over with by that point. It's not an excuse.
They do pickups. They do pickups before release. So, or they can. They can do pickups. They don't always do pickups, but they can do pickups.
Right, but I think they just criminally underutilized her. And granted, again, though, that's not actually totally the fault of the film. The book actually completely underutilizes Queen Akasha in the first place, because it's not really her story. Despite the fact that it's called Queen of the Damned, it is not her story. It is... the story of Maharat, and then, of course, of Lestat, but it's Maharat and how she is protecting humanity from Queen Akasha, essentially. That's one of the main storylines, anyway, but be that as it may, Aaliyah is my like. She was a beautiful human being, and, I mean, they totally, sadly, capitalized on that, on her death, when they marketed this movie. You know, it's her last movie. which I don't blame them for necessarily, but it is so loving towards her too, in a way. Like, the filming of her is just, it is really beautiful.
Well, it's dedicated to her.
It's dedicated to her. So I forgive this movie a lot just for Aaliyah.
I mean, that's fair. That is totally fair.
Despite criminally underutilizing her.
Yeah, she needs to be in this movie more.
My conclusion at the end of my live tweet today was, can we just have a Queen Akasha movie that's just her ruling over the world and, like, the ocean of blood and death? Because I would pay to see that movie.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Yeah, that would be very hard to do unless she turns out to actually be a vampire.
I would counter that if they decided to cast Queen Bee as Akasha, that would be a glorious, amazing thing. And I would see it a million times. And the Bayhive would be out for that too.
Yeah, she doesn't actually show up in the film, because I was wondering, where's Aaliyah? Where's Aaliyah? She shows up at the 58th minute of this movie.
Yeah. They have a couple of marble statues which are clearly modeled after her, but it's not really her.
That really doesn't count. Yeah.
That doesn't count.
But, like, actual Aaliyah doesn't appear till, quite a bit in.
Yeah, and then there's only maybe 15 minutes of her at the most.
Yeah, she's not in a lot of it.
That's sad. Made me sad. But anyway, that's my like. Please go on.
That's your like. Okay. Well, then I'll be quick with mine so that we can move on to dislikes, which I'm sure I'm going to disagree with everybody on, because this movie is fantastic.
I can't even talk to you anymore. I don't even know who you are.
I love you, Jen.
I love you too. Please go on.
Okay. So when I was thinking about this, because really I just wanted to talk about how much I like the soundtrack, because I own it on CD and digital, and I just listen to it, like, periodically. Just, it's fantastic. So beautiful. But what I do like about this is some of the sets in this are fantastic.
See, that's why I expected Paul to say the architecture.
That was my backup.
Right, because some of the architecture is beautiful. Like, the little room where Akasha, as the marble statue, is presented.
Oh, yeah.
Is a fantastic scene. Some of Lestat's, like, I guess his, like, pad, his Rockman pad, where he hangs out.
As Marius says, I just looked for the most gauche house on the street.
That was a great line.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it works. Yeah, there's a lot of really great set placements, and some of it is just really beautiful. Some of it is very just well-constructed for what it needs to be. Like, I'm amazed how they got the actual rock concert scene put together, because it feels like it is actually a massive, like, Coachella-size rock concert.
They apparently recruited 3,000 goths in Australia for that scene.
Jesus! That's a lot of people.
I was like, I didn't know there were that many goths in Australia.
Yeah, that's a lot of goths in Australia. You go, Australia. Good job.
Yeah, apparently that was not Death Valley. That was apparently a rock quarry outside of Melbourne.
They just have a quarry dedicated to rock in Australia.
Well, given the fact that it's a quarry, yes, probably.
Okay, so sorry, Alex is not on this podcast, so we don't need to do, like, the geologist jokes.
You did set that up.
You went there.
I meant rock and roll, not actual rocks rolling.
You tossed the ball, I just hit it.
Oh, goodness. So ridiculous. Well, I did not know that there was a quarry for music in Australia. And that means that Australia is officially the greatest country on the planet Earth. So,
which I will be going to 2 weeks as of the time of this recording.
Are you going to a rock concert in the quarry?
No, I...
But don't tease me!
No, but we're going to Australia, so...
Are you going to be in Melbourne?
That's where Continuum is.
Well, then I think you need to just go slightly outside of Melbourne and visit Werribee and the quarry. And get a picture, because that would be amazing.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, while there's a rock concert.
But you have to do it with Danny, because Danny is the ambassador of rock.
Dude, he would totally dress up as the character from Sons of Steel, Black Alice. He would do it.
So Danny actually just recently bemoaned the fact that he and Paul would not have enough time to cosplay as the characters from...
Oh my god. I would pay good money to see Paul and Danny actually dressed up as characters from that movie.
Sorry, dude. I will be passing by Werribee, I'm pretty sure, on my quest to see the Great Ocean Road. I don't know where this rock quarry is, though. To find it.
Picture.
If I can find the rock quarry, I'll take a picture.
Yeah!
Cool. But if you find snakes, make sure to take pictures of snakes.
Of course I will take pictures of snakes for you, Sean.
Make sure to touch all of them.
Do not do that.
And that, dear listeners, is how the Scoopy Fantasy Show lost a co-host. The end.
Yeah, because everything in Australia wants to kill you, except the wombats. That's not true. Actually, I think wombats want to kill you, too.
Probably.
They're just not good at it.
In relation to your like...
Yeah?
I was actually trying to figure out, and I haven't yet, so if any of our listeners hears this and is like, I happen to be an expert on the architecture of Queen of the Damned, I would love to know if the set, Maharat's house, is a set, or if that's an actual filming location, because that was gorgeous. Her, like, temple style.
That was a pretty cool house.
You know who's on my screen right now?
I don't.
Aaliyah.
As
the Queen of the Damned herself. And she's doing her little, like, the little dance thing where she's, like, enticing vampires to come to her. She's like, what up? Come to me.
That scene at the club was the best in the whole movie.
Oh my god. Right? Her dance was just amazing. She reminds me why I'm bi. I'm just saying.
God, she is a hot vampire. Like, you gotta give her credit. Like, Lestat's kind of creepy gross.
She is the only hot vampire in a movie that's supposed to be about hot vampires.
She is.
Yeah. Just saying. Shall we move on to our dislikes?
Aw, she cut out his heart with her bare hand and then eats it.
That's why she's the queen.
You gotta give her credit. Like, she just like, that heart. Anyway, moving on. Let's...
Paul, you get to do your first dislike.
My one and only dislike. Oh.
Wait, no, I know it's not your only dislike. It's just that you have to only pick one.
Yeah, I only have to pick one. This is what we call listeners a target-rich environment.
Aww.
I think I'll go with... Oh God, there's so many choices. Okay, I will go with the emo vampire himself, Lestat, portrayed by Stuart Townsend. As played by Stuart Townsend, who apparently could not act out of a paper bag if life depended on it.
Or lip sync for that matter.
He ruined League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, in my opinion.
I was going to mention that too. Yes, he plays Dorian Gray, plays Dorian Gray in that movie. And yeah, he can't act in that either. Because when I first saw him, I was like, I know this guy. Why don't I know this guy? I Googled. Oh, yeah, he was in that. He was horrible in that too. It's like when we get the flashback and we see Marius embracing Lestat, I'm thinking, Marius. Dude, you could do so much better than this wanker. Why? And then when Aaliyah decides to make Lestat his her new boy toy because he's killed her. I'm thinking, Aaliyah, girl, you could do so much better. And then Jesse the vampire groupie who is actually descended from a vampire and should know. Better is falling over Lestat, and I'm thinking, yes, girl, you could do so much better. I thought that phrase a lot while watching this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. You basically spend this entire movie going, well, I did anyway. I don't know about everybody else. I spent the entire movie questioning why people were into vampires. If Lestat was somehow supposed to be like,
the exemplar.
Yeah.
The exemplar of the hot vampire, because he was so awful. So, like, literally I was like, wait a minute. Are we supposed to be attracted to this, like, misogynist, creepy-ass thing? And then I realized, yes, and guess what? Somehow we all were at the time. Like,
it's because it's, like, part of that culture.
Megan can talk about this a little bit better, though, because Megan was actually a goth during this period of time, so.
Yeah, the whole waifish thing was really popular at the time, but even then, I don't know, when Lestat shows up and he's risen from his sleep because he hears this music playing in his old house and he thinks it's really cool, and he shows up and he lays across a couple amps in like this draw me like one of your French girls pose, and like he doesn't look like sexy vampire, he looks like an anemic paperboy.
Anemic
paperboy. Frame that.
That's a new body type we've invented.
Right. We are firmly establishing that the only example of attractive manhood is pectoral muscles. However, that's not actually what we believe.
No.
It's just that in the Queen of the Damned, you're supposed to be attracted to him because he's masculine, not because he's not masculine.
Well, I mean, there is some sort of, like, in the Anne Rice vampires, there was a level of femininity that went with the vampires, and that was still attractive, but this actor just does not pull it off at all.
Well, like, Marius does.
Marius is great.
Right, like, you kind of get it out of Marius, because he's got a little bit of that sophistication. He dresses really, like, let's be real, he dresses sexy as hell. Like, he's got that aristocrat look going on, and I'm like, yeah.
The red velvet. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. God, it's good.
I love that line, right? How did you survive the 50s in red velvet? I slept. No, I was interested because, like, to me, this was one of the great things about the goth scene in general, is that the sort of gender paradigms of what was attractive were totally broken down.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And they are broken down in this movie. You know, like, they have androgynous characters that are gorgeous. And it's cool that way. Lestat is not this pure example of sort of toxic masculinity. He is somewhat effeminate. And yet, he doesn't exude sexuality in the slightest. He just exudes creepy.
Yeah, the actor himself has zero charisma. Like, there is nothing magnetic about this individual on the screen at all. And it doesn't really have anything to do with his appearance. It's just the way he holds himself, and I don't know.
Yeah. Like, that first scene when he kills those groupies. Like, when that scene first shows up, I didn't actually expect he was going to kill his groupies. Like, I thought, oh, he's going to, like, play with them, maybe, like, a little bit of blood sucking, but he's not going to kill them, right? It's just going to be, like, little play. But, like, hold on. calm your jet. When I first thought that, when the scene started, and then I saw his behavior, and I thought, there is no universe in which any two people would think that this guy's not about to murder two people.
Except that we're supposed to somehow believe that goth chicks in the late 90s, early 2000s were so freaking dumb that they all fawned over people who were planning on murdering them. Like, that's what they are giving us in this movie, is this goth guys are creepy and serial killers, and somehow goth girls thought that was sexy. Like, that's what they're telling us.
Is that accurate, Megan?
I knew a lot of goth girls, like, I was amongst them. I wasn't quite this bad, but I, you know, they lacked a lot of judgment. It was... The attraction to danger was very, very real, and a lot of it was intentional disregard of what would be red flags for most people. But for me, I mean, my goth side was more I liked jumping in mosh pits and patent leather and fishnets and that kind of thing. So, but that there is a side that embraces the dangerous edge. There are people I knew who I could see going home with Lestat. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, like, that was my kind of memory, because I was on the sort of the periphery of the goth scene of that period. Definitely upholds sort of the patriarchal power structure.
And even aside from the patriarchal, you know, I don't want to say undertones, because they're very much overtones, but themes of the movie, there is a sort of element, and I went to a lot of goth clubs and concerts and things, and there was a lot of romanticizing of self-destruction going on, and that still exists in a lot of facets, and I think this very much played into that ideal.
Yeah. That Jesse.
Oh my God, Jessie. Yeah. I wanted to slap her, but I think she'd enjoy it, so.
And there's nothing wrong with enjoying getting slapped.
Consensual slapping is fine.
But Jessie takes it to a level that's just like, oh, Jessie, oh.
Oh, no.
Like, she wanders into, a vampire bar dressed up with, like, her version of the Leia things, but they're, like, bonbons on her head.
So, at first, I was like, oh, my God, the pseudo-Japanese cyberpunk aesthetic that was so popular at that mm-hmm. point in time. But then I was like, oh, my God, she just looks like Bjork.
The coat, you're right.
The coat and the coat. Little buns. The yeah. little buns.
It's so Bjorky. Oh.
That doesn't work at a vampire club.
No. They all can tell the second she walks in.
They know.
They know she's got...
But,
yeah.
you know...
And she's like, oh, by the way, like, I'm totally got a vampire friend, and, like, you shouldn't mess with me. And they're like, no, you don't. You're full of shit. What are you talking about?
He lives in Canada.
Yeah, my Canadian vampire boyfriend.
My Canadian vampire boyfriend. Totally real. Totally real.
Oh, no.
Hey, fun fact. The first woman I ever loved was a goth.
Aww.
But yeah, Jessie was an awful character, so where were we? Whose like was that?
That was my dislike.
Oh, that was your dislike. Dislike.
That was a definite dislike.
We haven't even gone on to the next one. Jesus.
Yeah, we migrated from Stuart Townsend to Jessie somehow.
I feel like that's a legit line of thought, though, from how awful Stuart is to how awful Jessie is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this leads us to what Megan's only dislike is. You can only pick one.
My singular dislike in the entire movie.
Yes.
Oh, God. So, well, since we led into Jessie, I'm going to pick Jessie. She had so much potential to start with. She was a researcher chick, which I thought was pretty cool. She was looking into this. And then it went from zero to I want to be a vampire very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Her motivation was non-existent. She just read his diary, which is a little creepy, let's be honest. I mean, you know, Lestat's got his boundaries too. She goes ahead, reads his journal, then goes to a club, as we talked about, you know, trying to get in with the vampires, I suppose. I don't really, not really sure what her plan was there. And then he scares off some people who are trying to attack her. Threatens her, and then leaves her in the dark alley, still outside of the vampire club, and she thinks this is pretty cool. And that's what starts her, like, the journal aside, that was what really was supposed to start her downward spiral of attraction to Lestat, and there was just nothing about that was attractive in any way. He treated her terribly, he's, you know, he's an evil vampire, and she thinks that's cool. And that was, like I said, that was a mirror of a lot of girls I knew at the time period, too. So, and I hope they don't recognize themselves as I talk.
I didn't get this relationship between Jessie and Lestat at all.
No.
It's like, why is Jessie falling for this guy so quickly? You'd think she would have some more brains, at least some more grounding, because A, she's a researcher for this paranormal thing. B, she's got a vampire ancestor who's kind of watching out for her, but she comes across as intelligence 3, if we're going back to role-playing games. Oh, I'm gonna wander into the vampire club looking like I'm fresh meat. Why?
Yeah, suspiciously covering up my neck, because that's not an obvious giveaway.
Yeah, and so when we have that final confrontation and Aaliyah tells Lestat, oh, kill her, and Lestat goes and drains her blood, I thought, oh, I guess that's the end of Jessie. Because I thought, why would there be a relationship between these two? I cannot, I could have seen why, what does even Lestat see in her? It's like, so when she gets revived and became a vampire, I'm thinking, huh, what, why?
Yeah, when she asked to be turned into a vampire after her weird, creepy date with him flying around the Hollywood Hills. And he shows her, you know, this is a monstrous thing. Like, you will have to murder people to survive. This isn't pretty. And she backs off. She goes, oh, you know, okay, that's scary. I don't want to do this. She actually turns him down. And then she goes to the concert he's throwing anyway, somehow weirdly tries to insert herself into what is going on, then learns that she's like the last mortal descendant of this ancient line, and knowing all of this is totally cool with becoming a vampire afterwards. Like,
it's just not developed enough.
It's lucky that Mara got turned into a statue at the end of this. Otherwise, she would slap, was like,
right?
You're my great-great-great-granddaughter, and you're doing this? You're an idiot! Like,
she spent thousands of years protecting this line of mortals, and then the last one is like, well, being a vampire is kind of cool and sexy. I'm gonna do it. That's it.
I'm horny for Lestat!
Yeah. For, you know, the chinless wonder. I don't...
Oh, goodness.
Sorry, he doesn't have the chin to carry that blood. I don't. I think that's...
No, you're so right. And that was one of my biggest problems, too, with her, was like that. And I don't think she necessarily is the very last of Maharat's line.
When the walls started bleeding when she died, I thought, yeah, she's definitely the last. So
yeah, I did like that family tree they had.
That was cool. Yeah.
That was nice. Some nice set design.
But God, Jesse was terrible. A terrible character. But she's supposed to be somehow like the audience proxy too.
Oh dear God.
Like just learning about this stuff and being attracted to Lestat and all of that stuff. Like,
that says a lot about what they think about their audience then.
Doesn't it though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Young, dumb, and full of fun.
Say that again, Paul.
Young, dumb, and full of something.
Right. Young, dumb, and horny. I'm pretty sure that's what they were going for.
I cleaned up what I said. Luckily, no one heard it.
I forgot that Lestat does parkour.
What?
Yeah, I'm like, so I've got the movie going in the background because why not?
No, there's so many reasons. So many reasons why not, Sean. We are listing the reasons why not right now.
And it's at the scene. It's at the scene with the fight at the big concert, and like he just does a bunch of like parkour moves, and I'm like, oh, okay. And oh, now Leah showed up. So okay, so it's all over. Party's done. Oh, boring.
Best entrance ever, though. Just saying.
I mean, she just like lights a bunch of people on fire
and bursts through the floor. Hello,
that was pretty great.
Yeah, but like I could do that on a good day. Like whatever. These are like the most unimpressive vampires.
They are.
They really are. Like, they just show up and it's like, oh yeah, we do this weird stutter step echo thing. Ba-da-ja!
All Lestat had to do was look for the gothiest goths in the audience, and those were the vampires.
Yeah.
Right, like, everybody's got hair that's like 90 years out of style, and they stare weirdly at people. Like, nobody in that, like, there's like goths, and you're like, oh, that's a real goth, and then there's like people that goths are modeling themselves after.
Right. Well, yeah, that's kind of the point.
So, and all the actual vampires have like shiny eyeshadow on the corners of their eyes. I don't know if you guys noticed this. It started to bug me after a while.
Like, why did they use makeup? They've been around for centuries. Use makeup so you can be less conspicuous. Like, I just don't understand. Like, Lestat's doing them a favor. He's teaching them how to not be so, like, I don't know. I mean, he's teaching them two lessons. He's teaching them both stupid things and right things. Like, maybe use eyeshadow so you look like you fit into a, like, a metal band, and then that would be smart.
Though in his defense, he's less pale than the last goth groupie that his manager tries to feed him.
No, the Episcopalian.
The Episcopalian. Yeah.
The Episcopalian.
That was a great line.
Oh, and they're flying away into the moonlight. It's almost romantic. And then you realize, what does Aaliyah see in him?
I don't know. Nothing. It's the worst. She says it, actually. She says that it's because he isn't afraid of living in full view of humanity. He's not living in the dark. Because she finds all other vampires completely weak and ridiculous because they're hiding. When the humans are just brutes and should be murdered. Her plan in the book is to literally kill off 90% of humanity. And then to farm the other 10%. She's a horrible, horrible, horrible creature.
That's an ambitious plan.
It is.
That reminds me of the movie Daybreakers. which is a much better movie than this one.
What happened to her king? Because he's, like, still sitting in that room.
Oh, she, like, tore his throat out.
Yeah, she tears his throat out because he's actually mostly, he's pretty much dead. So, in order, and they don't say this in the movie, so they just leave it up to the imagination that she's just absolutely ruthless and brutal, which is awesome, and I actually appreciate. But in the book, it's because he can't actually be brought back to life. So she uses him to survive because she's a badass.
Yeah, it's the Vampire Masquerade Diabolery. She's basically raising her vampire generation by taking his blood and getting more cool powers.
What do you think Lestat tastes like?
Poop.
I feel like Marius would taste like a really good wine.
Yeah, it's that red velvet coat, though. I mean, he's kind of signaling.
As would Armand, but only in the first movie.
Not in this movie, yeah.
Not in this movie. In this movie, he's like this little tiny blonde.
He looks like he sleeps under a bridge in this movie.
So you're saying he tastes like cheap vodka is what you're getting at.
I didn't recognize he was Armand until Jen said so. And I was like,
Me either.
Armand wasn't supposed to be Spanish in the first place. The only reason we remember him as hot in Spanish is because of Antonio Banderas. He's actually supposed to be this very young, too young Russian kid. Marius had a thing for younger people. Marius is actually a total creeper. And they didn't make him a total creeper in this. They made him way more badass than Lestat, who is the total creeper. But can I do my dislike?
What's your dislike, Jen?
My dislike is the utter betrayal of the total badass feminism that is in the original books with Maharat. Because Maharat ends up, even though she's the one that eventually defeats Akasha in this, and that's kind of her thing, like her role is what, 15 minutes of the movie, just like Akasha's is? And they still spend the rest of the 85 minutes of this film focusing on Lestat and Jesse, the worst human being ever, who utterly betrays her, you know, great, 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 great grandmother because Lestat's hot.
She betrayed her family so badly. She made her family tree bleed. Like, that is...
Right? Like, Maharat literally... So, the original story is... And I know it's terrible to go with, like, the original story, but whatever. Maharat's a total fucking badass and deserves it. She is raped by the third vampire who... He doesn't want to rape her, but he's forced to by the king and the queen, right? Akasha and Enki. She bears a child right before she's turned into a vampire. So she makes it her task to protect her family line and in some senses to protect the rest of the humanity as well because they are precious and because they are related to her child and who she used to be. But she's a fucking like super powerful witch, which is part of the reason that she's turned into a vampire. And I'm like, none of that is here. Literally none of that.
Nope, she's just that weird aunt that shows up for a bit and then finishes off Akasha after Lestat yeah. and the rest have done most of the work. Like,
and then turns into a statue. The end.
Why couldn't Lestat become the statue?
Oh, yeah, he apparently is actually the one who takes in the spirit, too. So it's like, so she doesn't even get the benefit of the spirit? What the hell is that crap? I don't know.
That's crap, yeah.
It's just crap. Like, they did it to Aaliyah's, to Akasha, in the first place. Like, they totally underutilized that character. And then they also did it with Maharat. 6th century old witch. Bad ass. And we get the crazy aunt, as Megan said. So, I don't know. It was just so disappointing. Like, especially since, like, there is this level of, like, you know, down with the patriarchy sort of inherent in Akasha versus Maharat. And
yeah, Akasha is sort of a female power fantasy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Still kind of working within patriarchal power structures, but
yeah,
problematic. Problematic. But, it's not perfect, but better than a lot of things that we were getting around circa 2002. So
yes.
Yeah. It was kind of disappointing that all of that got thrown out just to focus on the not sexy chinless wonder.
He has a chin.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, it exists.
I mean, what he doesn't have is a lot of other things, like proper muscle definition and...
Or a personality.
Personality. Yeah, I think that's more important in this situation is you can lack all the muscle structure that you want, that's fine. But when you have no personality to back that up...
Yeah, I mean, this is Lestat. He's supposed to be magnetic. You're supposed to be drawn to him just by his existence. And this guy is vacant.
Well, I mean, sure. But, I mean, when you don't have anything inside your head, that's how you get there.
I mean, like, you contrast the two characters. Like, you look at how Lestat moves versus how...
Aaliyah does,
right?
Or Marius. Yeah.
Or Marius, or literally any of the others who, like, move with a certain ownership of their movement, and where they somehow are doing the same creepy things. Like, Marius is not at any point not creepy. Aaliyah is clearly creepy, but so powerful and just entrancing as they're doing it versus... Lestat, who literally just looks like the creepy serial killer that lives on the corner.
I wouldn't even call him a serial killer. I think he's just lurking in the bushes.
He shot Spicer?
He shot Spicer! Oh, no. Oh, Paul. Oh. All right, Sean, it's your turn. It's your dislike.
It is my dislike turn. Oh, where do I start?
You love this movie, so you have trouble with this one.
Honestly, there's not a lot that I really dislike about this movie.
I hate you. I mean...
I don't believe you.
Right? No, he He's likes back in me. I believe him.
Oh.
Okay, calm your jets. I like Mac and Me, but I like it in the way that you like a movie that you know isn't actually good, but you watched a lot when you were a kid. And so you just still really like it.
Yeah, no, I get you. We understand. Mm-hmm. It's okay, baby.
Nostalgia.
I have to constantly defend myself because of my like for Mac and Me. Because people constantly give me crap for it. I get it in the streets, Jen.
I have to do it for Waterworld, so I understand.
So you understand what it's like to get yelled at in the streets by, like, random people who are like, you like Mac and Me, you piece of crap?
Random people. Granted, it's when I'm wearing my Waterworld t-shirts, but, you know.
Yeah, this is what oppression is like, Jen.
You know what? No. I am going to stop you there. You do not get to say that. I'm going to help you pull your foot out of your mouth now, you poor, straight white man.
And that makes sense because we watched that Bo Burnham thing, and it's fantastic. You all have to look it up. Look up Bo Burnham straight white male. It's hilarious.
Yeah,
anyway.
Exactly. So go ahead, please.
All right, so my dislike is mostly the plotting of this movie, because it doesn't get better after the beginning, which is awful.
It doesn't get better.
It doesn't really. So, like, the beginning is, like, he wakes up and he's like, oh, I heard some crappy band in, like, an attic, and I was like, yeah. That's what I want to be involved in, which has never happened in the history of ever. Nobody has ever been like, I heard random music in an attic and was like, that is the shit I want in. Nobody. And so that's where we start. And then it, like, there's this whole shit with, like Maharat and, like, there's all this other stuff and Akasha, and it's just, like, so jumbled together. And it's just not, it doesn't make sense. Like, what is our story? There's so many stories here. And I don't know what I'm supposed to really care about. Like, there's the bit with Jesse. And, like, okay, like, is that supposed to be a thing? Are they, like, why is she like him? Why does he like her? I don't know. It's supposed to be, like, a creepy, weird Romeo and Juliet thing. And they're, like, the Crips and the Bloods or whatever. And, like, yeah, it just doesn't work.
Are you saying Jesse is a Crip?
I don't know what I'm saying. I mean, it's too much wine.
When you're a Crip, you're a Crip all the way.
The vampire version of West Side Story? Yes. Like, I don't know what you're saying right now.
I don't know either. I just think that the plot is so jumbled and it doesn't know what kind of movie it is.
I'll agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely agree with that. I'm with Megan. If nothing else, yes, this movie makes no sense.
It really doesn't.
It wants to make sense so badly.
I like the soundtrack, but I have to admit that when Lestat was laying on those amps, and what came out of his mouth was Jonathan Davis. Like, that is not... Like, I'm okay with Korn. I've been to a lot of concerts and accidentally seen Korn at a lot of those concerts.
Oh, no.
But Jonathan Davis is not the voice you think of when you think, you know, sexy rock man vampire. It's like, get some Bruce Dickinson in there, not Jonathan Davis.
Yeah, well, there's that. And also, can I just say that there is, like, a lot of boob biting in this.
Well, what? That's why I'm drinking the red breast whiskey.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so Aaliyah bites Lestat's boob, and then Lestat bites Jesse's
boob. She bites
boob.
Him straight on the nipple. That was...
Yeah, like straight up on the... She just like... bites it off. I don't think it's still there.
I forgot he had a nipple.
Why would you forget that? He was once a man. They're born with nipples. Do you think Marius just took them? That's your penance? I made you a vampire. Give me your nipples. He just has like a chest full of like partially mummified nipples.
Okay, you just went way past what I was thinking, as you're wont to do.
And yet, that would make this movie better.
Yes, it
so
would.
So much better.
Let me show you my chest full of nipples.
His red velvet coat is actually lined with the nipples of his.
No! Oh, Megan, I'm so glad we had you on the show this evening.
This is great.
Okay.
Oh,
you were saying,
goodness.
You were so, are you done?
I think I've got it. I just, I can't go on anymore. There's now just like velvet coats full of nipples and chests full of nipples. It's just a nipple festival. That's...
I think we need to go on to grading this thing before we all die.
All right, Paul. Let us know your grade for this movie. Go for it.
Oh, dear God. I hate doing this. Okay, so it's not a failure. It's not an F movie. It's better than Mac and Me. The lead is bad. The female lead is bad, is stupid. There's a couple interesting things here. There's a couple interesting sets here. And made me fondly think of Vampire the Masquerade. So on the strength of that, I am going to manage to claw this up to a D.
Excellent. So I just thought, like you both to know that she didn't actually bite his nipple off. I have video evidence. So. It's still there.
Well, of course she didn't. That's Marius's thing.
Marius's coat of nipples is still canon.
God, he's been at this for so long. He just has so many nipples.
It's like Joseph and his Technicolor dream coat, but instead it's Marius.
Technicolor nipple coat.
I think we could make a musical out of this. I'm just saying.
By Korn?
By Korn.
By Korn, yes.
Lyrics by Jonathan Davis.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, goodness. All right. Megan, what about you?
Oh, God. So, this movie, in all of its flaws, definitely made goth me very happy when I was a teenage girl. So... I think I'm going to give it a C+. It's not a B, because a B movie I would watch again, but and I will not watch this again. But but I think it's a solid C+, mostly for Aaliyah's brilliance and power.
Damn, Skippy.
So do you all curious what I mean? I'm looking at the album now from Korn, their nipple album. It's a very important album.
No. No, you're stopping. You're done.
I mean, you don't want me to sing lyrics from Got the Nipple?
I do.
I do. You really want me to sing lyrics from Got the Nipple?
I deeply do, yes.
All right, I'll work on it while Jen tells her her grade.
I don't want to tell my grade ever now. Ever.
Oh.
But since our guest apparently would like to hear Sean epic Got the Nipple, I since my headcanon is now that Queen of the Damned is a very early prequel to Battlefield Earth. And I gave Battlefield Earth a C. I am not sure how I gave it a C, but apparently I gave it a C. I am going to give it an equal grade to that and just call it a C. I think it probably actually deserves something much closer to an F, but I think I'm just going to give it a C because it is really a goth wet dream of a movie, and for that...
It super is.
Right. Props. Yeah. It's like the love letter to goth culture of the late 90s, early 2000s. And for that, I think it the C is acceptable. Plus, it's Aaliyah's last movie, and she is amazing and beautiful and much missed.
Yeah, she owned it. Yeah.
Wow, I'm gonna be the anchor to this movie because Sean's not gonna give it that low of a grade. What grade would you give this, Sean? Before we get into nipple action, why don't you tell us the grade?
Nipple? Oh, yeah, got the nipple. Yeah, it's corn smash hit. Really, when you think about it.
Oh dear God!
But first, your grade, my darling.
Okay, so here's the thing. There's a lot of nostalgia for this movie.
There is.
It's not good by any stretch of the imagination. It's got a lot of terrible things about it. But I still kind of enjoy it, and I have probably seen this movie more times than most of the people on this current podcast, which is becoming a trend I find
that's
very disturbing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, consider you're watching it right now, I think that's
safe. Oh, come on, how much grief did everyone give me for the black hole? Which I've seen more than everybody combined, except maybe David.
Yeah, but that movie had two trash cans on wires fight each other in air.
Oh my God, did it? Why have I not seen this movie?
Yeah, that was the torture where we all piled on Paul.
Oh.
There's always at least one where one of us is like, no, I will defend this movie until the death. And the rest of us are like, okay, but we're going to eviscerate you. And we go,
but
that
you
is
will
acceptable.
Actually die.
That was the hill Paul chose to die on. I will die on the hill for Queen of the Damned. I enjoy it, but it's not good. But I will say that this movie is not the worst thing we have ever seen for this, but it's not good. And so by that logic, I am kind of forced to give it a D+, because it's not great.
That's low. That's much lower than I thought you were going to give it.
Yeah, would you think I'd get a B+?
I was thinking C+ at the
worst. I don't think this is a C movie. I think this would be a C movie if you cut out two of the subplots. And then it would be in C rank.
Is one of those subplots Lestat?
That would be a much better movie.
Wouldn't it? I'm telling you, Akasha just bathing the world in blood.
You know what? I could see Jesse becoming obsessed with Akasha.
Oh my God.
That is a movie I
love. Oh my God.
God. The FF romance between Jesse and Akasha.
That would be amazing.
But anyway, please.
Yeah, we average out to a C-.
Not bad. We did pretty good, I think.
That's acceptable.
That's a fair grade for this movie. Sean, why don't we let Megan tell us where to find her and about her new book really quickly, and then you can send us off with your rendition.
Of Corn's Got the Nipple? Yeah.
Corn's Got the Nipple. I think it's the best way we can do this. So Megan, please tell us where we can find you and about your new book.
I'm a little afraid of telling people where to find me after the Spicer in the Bushes come. There aren't any bushes outside my house, people, okay? I am around the internet. I am Megan of Blushy on Twitter, and I'm just sort of generally, if you Google Megan E. O'Keefe, I am one of the many Irish descendants named Megan E. O'Keefe, who happens to be a writer. But I own MeganO'Keefe.com, so I come up first.
Well done.
Yeah. My First book is called Steal the Sky. It's an airship heist, and the wrap-up to that particular trilogy just came out. It's called Inherit the Flame.
Yay! Congratulations.
Congratulations on finishing the trilogy.
Aw, thank you. It's kind of a big and scary moment, both.
I can imagine. So, everybody, go find Megan. Do not put anything in her non-existent bushes. Buy and read her book.
Yes, that is acceptable stalking.
Yep, and obviously we'll put links in the show notes, so.
All right, Sean, do your worst.
Here's your moment.
So look, I'm not going to profess to really know all the lyrics that well. So I will just sing the chorus, and Jen, if she so chooses, can set it to music from Korn and put this as our closer.
This makes me so happy, Sean.
Because this is really, like, I mean, if I'm being honest, this song had a great influence on my life as a young teen. It taught me a lot about things like the birds and the bees, and...
Given the number of times I've seen you touch your nipples over the years, I'm not surprised.
Oh, God.
I think I broke myself. Thank you, Megan, for being on the show. And as much as I appreciate that, I hate you so much right now for inviting Sean to do this.
I'm really, really not sorry, Jen.
All right. I gotta stretch it out a little bit.
It's okay if you can't sing, Sean. Neither can Jonathan Davis.
That's okay. When you set it to music, it's going to be probably, it'll sound like, right like Korn. It'll sound like at the album. Yeah. All right.
God makes me. The more I see the nipple, who wants to see? God told me. I've already got the nipple. Oh, I say.
That's all I can do. Sorry. You can just repeat that twice because it's the same thing twice. So
I was literally holding my mouth so I would not laugh over
you. I'm sorry, I couldn't stop. I tried.
It was amazing.
I think, listeners, that really was an awkward ending and scene.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Our intro and outro music comes from The Launch by Cronux. You can find out more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.